Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to WFB Talk Continues. This is Deb Ginz with Women's Friday Night Football Preview, and I am as happy as can be to let you know that we have a guest tonight. This is Dr. Mary Rose Roach. Welcome to the show, Mary Rose.
Hi. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Let me give the listeners out there a little bit of information. Mary Rose Roach is one of the running backs for the Philadelphia Liberty Bells. And in the first couple weeks, she's led the league in rushing. For the first week, she had 12 carries with 264 yards. And then last week, I believe it was 8 carries, 292 yards and 3 touchdowns. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. I'm not sure, completely sure about the stats, but that's good.
You're so humble. I wanted to give the listeners a little bit of background about you. We were talking before the show, and we actually grew up in the same hometown. You want to briefly touch on that and maybe moving to Connecticut?
Yeah, I don't usually meet people that are from Wichita, Kansas. So when you said you were from there, it was definitely a surprise. But yeah, that's where I was born there, and I moved to Connecticut when I was 5 and remained there until I went to Philadelphia in 99. I ran track at Temple, and I studied communications and law there.
Okay, so you were at you got your undergrad and then also continued your study there with Temple University Beasley School of Law, correct?
That's right. That's right. I like Philadelphia so much. I decided to stay for another few years.
And at what point in time did you start finding out about women's football? How long ago?
I'm trying to think. It was a while back. I know there was a lot of publicity when the league first started up. I'm not sure what the league was called at the time, but I remember hearing about it when I was playing sports at Temple, and I would have loved to play, but I had a scholarship at the time, and my coaches wouldn't let me play tackle football while I was playing sports for them.
Right.
So I wasn't able to take the opportunity to play at that time, but it was kind of something that I always wanted to pursue in the back of my head. I always kept it, you know, as an interest.
So you graduated from Temple first in 2003 and then with your doctorate in 2006. How soon after that did you start playing football?
While I was at Temple, I played intramural football. That's like flag football and like two-hand touch football in different rec leagues. And I played every year up until, I mean, even this year, I try to play as much as I can. It's definitely my favorite sport. I played it since I was a kid. So I think finally this year, since I didn't have any other obligations that I needed to, you know, really dedicate myself to, I finally just tried out and, you know, gave it a go.
Well, there's quite a buzz going on in the league about your performance the first two games, that's for sure. So you have a couple of other running backs. They haven't accumulated quite as many yards as you. Correct me if I get these names wrong, but is it Shamia Carr?
Yeah, that's how you pronounce her name, Shamia Carr.
Okay, yeah, and she's got 178 yards, and then Jeanette Hibbs?
Yeah, that's Jeanette and I actually played soccer together at Temple. She was one of the first people I met when I came to Philadelphia, and when I decided to play, she was one of the reasons why. Like, I made the decision because we decided we'd play. You know, we'd go out together.
So this is her first season as well?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I found them a little lower than you in the stats, but do you guys also do some receiving? I see that you have at least a couple of catches this week for 54 yards. I didn't see it in the stats for last week because they've combined them now. So do they throw some balls? balls in the air to you guys as well?
Yes, and the thing is, I think, you know, the first 2 weeks I was able to have some, you know, decent games, and unfortunately it doesn't reflect the caliber that, you know, our team puts out there as far as, like, all of us are pretty much equally talented. I think in the next couple of weeks, if the other teams draw more attention to me, they'll see the other running backs are, you know, obviously going to step up and, you know, catch passes, make big plays, make big runs. So, you know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks you'll be interviewing one of them. But, yeah, we're always looking to make big plays and, you know, just kind of finish on and execute as well as we can.
Your coaches there, do they emphasize the defense or the offensive side the most? I mean, I played for about 3 years, and it was always defense wins championships, defense wins championships. You guys have definitely got it together on offense. Do they emphasize that more, or is it pretty equal? What do you think the coaches emphasize the most?
It's hard to say. I think it's equal, but I'd have to say on both sides of the ball, I think the coaches have been impressed with the girls that have came out for the team, and they're trying to do more advanced, more complex things on both sides of the ball. I feel like the teams that we've gone up against, they definitely bring something new every week, and the coaches are always sure to, like, make sure we're on the next level, or at least you know, making sure that we're staying on top of our game. And I don't know. I couldn't say that we emphasize one side more. I think we try to capitalize on our strengths on either side of the ball.
How big, Mary Rose, is your roster? Do you have any players that have to play both sides of the ball, or is it pretty much completely split offense and defensive?
We do play both sides of the ball. I think there's probably maybe 4 or 5 players. I'm not sure exactly, but there's about a few of us that do both ways, and I think that it's because the coaches have confidence in our conditioning and our focus on the field. But our roster is big enough to do 11-11 both ways. I mean, I'm sorry, 11-11 and not play both ways. But that's okay. Just, I guess, the coach's decision to play some people both ways.
Well, now you said we. Does that mean that you have played in the defensive side of things too?
Oh yeah, I play safety on defense, and I think some corner, but mostly safety.
Okay, and is that free safety?
Yes.
So, what would you? You know, when you guys line up at the end of practice and you're doing your wind sprints, are you probably the one that's out there at the end first, or are those other three chasing you right on your heels? Who's finished with their sprint at first?
We have a few girls on the team that are just as fast, if not faster than me. I think, like I said, our coaches are definitely impressed with the talent that we have this year. I don't know. I'm always trying to hang with a few of the girls that are pretty fast, and I think Shania, Nettie, and, you know, the other – actually, those are the two that you mentioned. They're right there, too. So we definitely try to bring it to the next level. Our team works together, and we work hard, you know, at practice. So it really makes a difference on the field.
Excellent. We can kind of take a minute here and look ahead to the next game that you guys play. Who is your next opponent?
We play New Jersey May 9th. And that's next. We had a bye week this week, so we'll be seeing them a week from tomorrow.
Are you guys starting to throw some new things in there just to get ready for them? I'm looking for their. I'm kind of stalling here, trying to look for their record so I can kind of get an idea of how they're going to do. I knew you guys had a bye. I wasn't sure who you played next week.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're. I know they beat Binghamton. I think it was like 21-0. I don't know if they played again after that, but, so far we at practice, we try to go over different schemes that we'll face against them and stuff like that. But, I know it's been a struggle to get game tape from other teams, and we're just trying to make sure that we can be as you know, as well prepared as possible.
There are, well, New Jersey, you're saying the New Jersey Titans, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, they're 2-0. You guys are 2-0. The Mayhem, they've got a 2-0 record. Let me look at the other conference. The Memphis Belle, the Iowa Thunder, and the Outlaws. So there are six teams that are still in that, with that 2-0 mark. So with you guys having a bye, you'll kind of be playing a little bit of catch-up, but New Jersey's going to be right there with you. Have you found that it's a pretty big transition just playing the rec football and the two-hand touch and now really putting on the pads and really getting to do some hitting and run your legs off trying to avoid being hit?
It's actually not brand new to me. When I was 6 years old, I started playing on my brother's football team. It was like the Pee Wee Pop Warner Football League, and I was the only girl, and I played with my brother. He was the quarterback and I was the running back. We played together for, I think, 4 years until he went to high school. And then I was about 4 or 5 years. And then I continued playing until I was 14. And I was pretty much the only girl in the league, usually. I mean, when I got older, we traveled. But, I'm used to playing with pads on. It was actually something that I always wanted to do. But when I got to high school, it wasn't like there was no future for me to like go to college and play. So it's kind of like finally I have the opportunity to do something that I was kind of groomed to do when I was little. You know, I played for so long, and putting the pads back on is kind of like, you know, get going back to square one.
Oh, that's a neat thing. There's not very many players that were able to play when they were kids. In fact, that's one of the things that, you know, you hear so often in women's football. We're kind of playing a little catch-up because we played basketball. We played, you know, softball. We've run track. We've done, you know, a lot of different things, but not very many people have played football from a young age. But you have been able to do that. We have a question on our chat board. Somebody who is interested in knowing what attracted you to play tackle football. So would you say that you were just attracted to it because of your brother, or what brought you into the tackle football world?
It's an easy question for me. It was definitely my brother. Growing up, like I love sports, and he was definitely like a role model for me because he played everything and he was really good at it. And he kind of took me under his wing. Whenever, like, him and his friends would play, he'd always, like, take me on his team. So I guess he was kind of always trying to impress my brother and, like, play at his level. So
did you say he's a little older than you?
Yeah, he's 2 years and 11 months older than me. He's I think he's 31 now. So, yeah,
Go ahead, finish.
No, he's actually my biggest fan. Like, he makes me, you know, send him all the game tape if we have game tape, or he makes sure that if I have stats, like, I send them to him. He's my biggest fan and my biggest critic. But, <yeah.
laughs> I see. Now, is he still in Connecticut then, so he doesn't actually get to see the games live?
No, unfortunately, he's not going to see any games this year. He's in the Navy. He's an officer in the Navy, and he works on ships. So he's usually out to sea most of the year, and this year he won't be able to see any of the games because he gets deployed in a couple months. He's actually stationed out of San Diego, so he's not even on the East Coast. So when he is here, he'd have to fly across the country to see me play.
Mm-hmm. Or else you guys would have to come out here and play.
Which would be great.
Yeah.
I love California. I'd love
to come. Our weather's a little nicer in the middle of the winter, but right now you guys are having some pretty good weather. Mary Rose, if I may, I'd like to kind of direct us to a little bit different direction, and you can share as much or as little about this as you'd like, but in doing a little research, I found out that you are involved with a really neat foundation, Black Women in Sport, and I wanted to kind of give you an opportunity. You don't have to go into a lot of detail, but anything you'd like to say about this, why you're involved, some of the neat stories. I mean, you guys are basically taking kids in and giving them an outlet for all their free time and helping them get into sports. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right on. Actually, I was at Temple University at the time, and my professor was the founder of the Black Women in Sport Foundation. She had approached me and Jeanette Hibbs, who you talked about before. She had asked us to help out with mentoring her programs. What the foundation does is they go into Philadelphia in the different inner city schools that don't really provide a wide array of sport possibilities, particularly for girls. And we teach non-traditional urban sports like tennis, soccer, fencing, golf, lacrosse, softball, pretty much sports that they wouldn't see in their, in their gym curriculum, or even on, it wouldn't be an opportunity for them to play at their school. So we would go into the different schools and teach the kids how to play soccer or tennis or whatever, and it kind of became, a summertime job to a full-time position. And then I kind of like, now I don't do it full-time, but I try to dedicate as much time as I can to carrying out the mission of the organization.
It sounds like a really neat extracurricular activity for you, since you don't seem to have very many interests or obligations.
Right, and
Went to
like,
football and with practicing law there in Philadelphia. You just sound like you just sit around a lot.
no, it's actually, I'm such a champion for this mission because, I can directly relate to having sports as part of my, my, not to sound, religious, but like my savior. I mean, I started playing sports, and it, got me a scholarship to go to a, a great college, and it's kind of kept me focused in life, kept me in shape. And there's so many things that I get from sports. And you see younger girls growing up, and the fact that they might not have the opportunities to take advantage of athletics like I did. It's kind of like a great way to give back, and also it's fulfilling to be able to provide that type of opportunity for girls.
Sounds fascinating. What age group does the foundation cater to? Like mostly high school kids or younger kids or any age, anybody who's involved, well, who wants to be involved?
Our mentoring programs, they cater to predominantly, like, well, just I guess primarily grade school. So that's preschool all the way up till 12th grade. And we also do programs for women, professional development programs, coaching education. We have this program called the Next Level, I'm sorry, the Next Step program. It's part where we partner with the NCAA. And we provide coaching, training, networking, and different workshops for aspiring coaches and coaches.
Great.
We
We
also, we, oh,
when
go ahead.
I played football out here, we had an opportunity to go work with a really small group of kids, a couple of different situations with camps, and then do some hospital visitations through the Christian Akoya Foundation. And it was such a rewarding thing to get to, work with kids and be instrumental. I'm a teacher, so I kind of work with kids all the time, but it's still a different kind of experience when you do it through that sort of a foundation or that sort of an organization. So I just wanted to bring that out. Sometimes people consider, football to be that thug sport where you just go beat each other up, especially if they don't understand the intricacies of the game. But, here I have the privilege tonight of speaking with you, an attorney practicing law in Philadelphia that has managed to not only go to a great university to get a graduate degree, but a doctorate, and you're also involved with helping kids channel their lives. So it's quite an impressive organization. I thought we'd get into that a little bit. But
Well,
now back to football, Mary Rose. Oh, did you have something else? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to say that the kids definitely, it's a benefit for me too, because they keep me like young, they keep me on my toes. I mean, if there's one thing that I've kind of promised to myself, it's that every time I go out and play, that I don't get beat, and it's getting harder and harder as the years go. Like, not that I'm old yet, but these girls are, that we have some decent athletes that are some pretty good athletes actually that come through the program. So it always gives me something to strive for, not to get beat by my kids. So,
Yeah. Now, is that foundation just in Philadelphia, or is it quite a few places across the country, or?
it's a national organization. We're our headquarters is in Philadelphia, but we hold conferences all over the country. We have a new documentary that comes out every year, and we market that all over the country. It's kind of like an inspirational video teaching tool, and then our website, which caters to like national like initiatives, whether it's fundraising or different campaigns that we do. We definitely don't limit ourselves to just the Philadelphia area.
Okay. Training wise, I wanted to keep in touch or get us back to that. Things you said the kids keep you on your toes. What kind of training regimen have you been at to keep you ready for football? And you've just kind of been this instant powerhouse, instant sensation. What have you done that is keeping you in such good shape? What are you, 32, I guess? Is that about right? Not to ask your age or anything, but
yeah,
in your early
30s? I'm 28.
28, okay.
Yeah.
So what do you normally do just to stay in shape and keep yourself ready for some football?
Well, I try to maintain. A lot of times you get busy and it's hard to stay as focused as, you know, I was in college. It's impossible. Like with, you know, 2 to 3 days, that's just not going to happen anymore. But I do try to work out at least 2, 3, 4 times a week, whether it's, you know, speed and agility, endurance, weightlifting. Like, I try to mix it up and do as much as I can, so it's at least effective, you know, for the sport. My teammates might might have a little bit of animosity towards me because I spoke with the coaches, and I made me and a couple other girls on the team. We do workouts we try to do like 30 minutes to an hour conditioning workouts on our off weeks. During each practice, and that goes like with speed and agility, endurance training, all that I've kind of been able to grow more and more familiar with over the years playing sports at Temple. And just I also train kids in athletics and speed and agility, so it's a passion of mine to, like, you know, be in shape and, you know, stay fit, and I try to bring that to the team. Some people receive it better than others, but I know that everybody knows it's for the good of the entire squad. But, yeah, I prefer working out with the team, too, because it's never fun to work out by yourself.
What would you say are the best and most interesting or most fun two parts of the workout? And then what are the two most grueling, agonizing parts of your workout? Like, I know, because I played linebacker, so we were off in our own little world, but the running backs, man, they got to do all these fun little box drills, and they got to run with weights on their belts, and then they got to run behind in front of a parachute. Hopefully you're not behind the parachute, but what kind of things, you know, do you find to be pretty interesting and fun as far as fitness goes?
My favorite part of working out is just achieving. Like, you always have to, I always try to push myself harder, and I think with that comes the second, my second most favorite thing, which is like that camaraderie that you have when you're working out with teammates. You push each other, you know, you're like in it as a team, and, you know, everybody gets it done, and it's like you've accomplished something as a team, and it kind of brings you closer together. So I guess camaraderie and the fact, like, just like, you know, doing, pushing your body to the limit and, you know, exceeding what you thought you could do. Those are my favorite parts. My least favorite parts are the pain afterwards. Definitely the pain afterwards. I think I can speak for myself right now. I did a leg workout the other day, and I can barely sit right now. So that's my least favorite part, is dealing with the pain after.
I gotcha. I'm watching the chat board here, and there's I think it's a team member. Do you have a team member named Landau?
Oh, gosh.
She's giving me her comments about your workouts. So evidently they are not only very effective and they're challenging her, she's feeling that pain that you're talking about. And so hats off to you for the training regimen. It's definitely helping your team if we look at your record. But Landau, she's giving me a lot of positive feedback here.
Yeah, she's definitely my favorite team, like, workout buddy, because she works hard, and even though she hates it during it, after, at the end of it, she's only, you know, looking at me like she wants to kill me a little bit. During the workout, it's definitely I need to watch my back, because I might catch a knife. But after the workout, you know, when when things are like definitely calmed down a little bit, she appreciates it. And it's just, like I said, my favorite part is the camaraderie and getting through it together. And we push each other. And, you know,
right.
I enjoy that the most.
One of my questions was actually about your linemen. With three players over 100 yards, you must have some linemen that you could give a little shout out to. Do you want to name some names? They're the ones who kind of keep you safe, I suppose.
Yeah, well, Landau is the captain, one of the captains of the football team, and she's definitely a leader. She's had experience playing football, and my first year coming out, like, she kind of gave direction. Even though I'm not a lineman, I could tell that she had the leadership qualities, and, you know, I have a lot more confidence, you know, in my line. Not that all of them aren't amazing, phenomenal linemen. She's definitely the person that has kind of directed them and gave them guidance, you know, so far this year. Beth, I wish I knew everybody's last name, but Beth is our center. She's phenomenal, comes to play. She's another girl that just comes and does the workout, knows it's going to be grueling, is grueling throughout, but finishes it every time, whether she's in pain or not. I definitely have to give a shout out to Catherine Hurley, who's injured right now, but she's a threat. I mean, when she's on the line, the holes just open up. Unbelievable. So I can't wait for her to get healthy and come back out. Catherine, I wish I could say her name right, Staniskis. She's a left tackle. I mean, it's definitely a benefit to me, Jeanette and Shania, that our line has experience, size, and they come out and play. Every Saturday they come and play, and it shows with our offense that our success can be attributed, you know, primarily to them.
I gotcha. We had a fairly good line. I think at one point in time our line was over 1,000 pounds combined. Not any one individual, of course, but 1,000 pounds combined, and they were really tough. And so, you know, I always try to, you know, you get the recognition, and sometimes when there's three people that are being successful, it's always partially due to that line. I'm getting some names here from Landau. She's giving me Makrovich.
Yeah, I can't forget Ish.
Yeah, and then Dan, she's probably making these up, so I sound foolish trying to read them, but Kathleen, the tackle, Kathleen Stanish?
Yes, I tried to say her name, but...
Tiffany Torrentine.
Right. She's another veteran that's been around for a while, great player.
Myesha Upshur?
That's right. Yeah, I call her Ish, but yeah, she's the pulling. She's one of our pulling folks. So, you know, she's a huge threat to the defense. Once she gets out in front and she clears things up for the running backs, she makes
those
a big difference.
Are some of the hardest hits in football that nobody ever sees. Is when that pulling guard rounds the corner and knocks somebody out. I'm sure you've probably seen a few of them so far, but that is, you know, the intricacies of football, sometimes people overlook them. But, boy, when that pulling guard hits somebody off guard, oh, my goodness. Actually, I've had that experience and got a concussion from it, being on the other side trying to drive in. But
yeah, I was going to say, as a linebacker, I'm sure you came across a couple of those.
Yes, it's a pretty amazing thing when you don't see somebody coming in, and the next thing you're counting stars and birdies and they're swimming in the sky together. But I'm about to run out of time with you, Mary Rose. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to anybody who's listening? Any encouragement to girls who want to play football? Perhaps somebody who's got a kid that's wanting to play football, they're trying to discourage them. What would be the words that you'd like to share with anybody who's considering football or wants to know what to do to be involved?
I just have to say that, you know, being able to be exposed to so many different sports over my life, if one thing is, I'd like to say football is like any other sport. I mean, there's going to be contact in any other sport. There's going to be, you know, negatives and positives to playing. But, you know, the bottom line is it's a sport, and you get so much from, you know, whatever sport it is when you play. The dedication, the commitment, the camaraderie with your teammates. If you like the sport, play it, no matter what it is, because there's so many benefits that you can get from it. I just want to thank also my coaches, head coach Bill, Coach Mike, Coach Trapp. Their dedication this year has been phenomenal, and I'm hoping that they lead us to the chip in August. My teammates, my line especially, Shania, Fender, and Captain Hurley, who are presently, you know, not playing, but they'll be back soon. And, you know, the Liberty Bells and all the other teams out there, you know, I wish you the best of luck. Obviously my team, I wish the best of luck, but the other teams, you know, I hope they have a good season and, you know, everybody stays healthy and plays well.
Mary Rose Roach, I appreciate all of your time, your wonderful words of wisdom, and I think you are a great person, and it's a pleasure to know you, even if we haven't talked face-to-face. You come across as being a very wholesome and wonderful person. I appreciate talking with you.
Thank you, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk. It's been great and definitely an honor.
The girls on the chat room want me to wish you good luck with the rest of your season.
All right, good luck to them, too.
And your teammates are saying, go Bells, so I better put that in there. They might look me up someday and hurt me.
That's right, go Bells. Hopefully you'll hear more about us.
All right. Well, if you keep racking up the yards and your team is as successful as it's been this first 2 weeks, we will hear more about you.
All right. Well, thanks again, and have a good night, everybody out there. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Landau.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you so much for calling in.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. Bye. So our show is comes out of California, so it's 7 o'clock here, and on a game night. Well, I guess she's got the weekend off, but I'm kind of keeping Mary Rose up and away from her normal Friday evening activities. But I do appreciate the chance to talk with her. We didn't get into too much information about the WFA, but let me go back to some statistics here and remind you we do have 6 teams that are undefeated so far: the New Jersey Titans, the Philadelphia Liberty Bells, and that's Mary Rose's team, and then the West Michigan Mayhem. In the other conference, we have the Memphis Bells with a 2-0 record, the Iowa Thunder, and then the Austin Outlaws. The Austin Outlaws played a really close game last week and were able to come out with a victory. So we've got some heated competition. In this upcoming week, we've got the Indiana Speed. Oh, I overlooked the Indiana Speed. That's a fourth team, or the seventh team with a 2-0 record. Indiana Speed is playing the Toledo Rain, and I'm looking for them to pull a win out. West Michigan Mayhem, I'm looking for them to defeat the Dayton Diamonds. The Gulf Coast Riptide play the Emerald Coast Barracudas, and my pick would be the Riptide there. The Jacksonville Dixie Blues will be playing in New Orleans against the Blaze, and I didn't have a lot of information on that game, but I do think that the Blues are going to pull that one off. I believe the Iowa Thunder will probably defeat the Kansas City Storm there in Iowa. The Missouri Phoenix and the Minnesota Machine, I did not find a lot of information on those two teams. The Houston Cyclones, the Mustangs, your guess is as good as mine, and they're probably better. The Sabercats will be hosting the Austin Outlaws, and that should be a fairly good game. And then we have the Cincinnati Sizzle playing in Columbus against the Comets. I'm going to go with the Comets on that one. So we probably should have covered a few more of the individual stats for the WFA, but we went into that quite a bit last week. Some of the stats end up getting upgraded through the week, and so if I'm giving you information, for instance, I think last week we talked about the Barracudas having a pretty good start, and now they have kind of filtered down a fair pace in the team offense. Leading the team offense is, of course, the Liberty Bells. They've accumulated 1,200 yards, and then we have the Comet, the Bells have 900. The Mayhem have about 842. So we've got quite a few teams that are racking up yard after yard. And just want to say that this league is performing well. We wish the teams the best. I'm going to transition into the IWFL here pretty shortly. I mentioned this is a pre-recorded segment. I mentioned a little bit about my bulldog. I do live for football, I live for motorcycles, and I live for my bulldog. So anytime you really get a picture of my personality, it's going to include my little bulldog. Want to say a quick word to any of the players that are listening who have suffered some injuries. Take care of yourselves. Stay true to your team and keep supporting them. Anytime you're around, take some love from your teammates and give a little back, because injured players are a part of the game, and we want you to feel like you're involved and don't crawl in a corner. We want you there. As we segment into the IWFL, I want to say thanks for listening, because it'll be an automatic sign-off there at the end. Appreciate all of the people who support women's football. We don't get a lot of money. We don't get too much recognition, although it's getting a lot better. But we definitely have the heart and the love for the game, and so that's what bonds us together. So my sisters in football, I applaud you for staying involved, and anything we can do to promote women's football, that's what we need to do. So have a good evening, and we'll see you next Friday. And we're going to transition here into the live portion. The pre-tape portion. I got to tell you, Hank, the bully, and I, we've been talking football all day, and so taxing that he's napping. So if you hear something snoring in the background, that would be the bulldog. I don't think it'll come over the phone, but in case it does, you'll know what the snoring is. It's not me. So we had 20 games last Saturday, and the Punisher Fear game on Friday was already, of course, complete by the time the Friday night preview came on. So we had 20 games, and I tried to make some predictions. There were three games that had I didn't find enough stats to really make a prediction on. And so out of those 17 remaining games, 13 were correct or incorrect. So I got to make this a game out of it. You know, I am a little competitive. And so we called the Diamonds right, the Amazons right, the Warriors and the Divas, the Force, the Explosion, the Quake, the Monsoon, the Passion, the Fox, the Shockwave, the Tigers, and the Freedom. The four that got past me, the Firebirds beat the Crushers, the Mayhem beat the Energy. And let's see, where's the other one? Like I called the Sirens, and the Majestic picked that game. So just to recap all those games, the Diamonds beat the Aftershock, Amazon beat the Breakers here in California, the once the Warriors beat the Crush, the Firebirds crushed the Crushers. Well, I don't know if it was a crash, but the Divas beat the Demolition, the Mayhem upset the Energy, and the Force beat the Vixen, the Explosion beat the Locomotion, the Quake beat the Menace quite handily, the Militia beat the Sharks, the Monsoon beat the Maniacs, the Nemesis beat the Blitz, the Passion were over the Nighthawks, the Fox beat the Nightmare, the Queens beat the Justice, the Rebels beat the Hurricanes, Shockwave beat the Pride, the Majestic beat the Sirens, the Tigers beat the Thunder, and the Freedom beat the Vipers. So, taking that into this week for the IWFL season, we have a few teams that are 2-0 going into this week. And this will be the games that will be played on May 2nd. Excuse me. So the one of the top teams in the Western Conference, the Majestics, who are 2-0, and the only 2-0 team in that division, or in that conference, they do not play this week. They are actually 3-0 now. Sorry if you include the Tier 2 team. And they have a bye. So that means that the one of the better games on the West Coast is probably going to be the rematch of the Quake and the Amazon. The Quake has suffered quite a bit of injury this season so far. A couple of their key defensive players are out. the Amazons as well have had a few players go down. They played without a couple of their key players last week due to some various circumstances, but we're waiting to see who's fit and ready to go. But I am going to take the Amazons in that matchup. And that's one of the big matchups on the western side of the country. And then in the Midwest, in the Western Conference, we have a huge matchup between the Chicago Force, which is a 3-0 team, and the Kansas City Tribe, which is 2-0. And we tried, actually, to get a guest from the Kansas City Tribe to come onto the show, their quarterback. Her name escapes me right at the moment. I'll probably look it up before the show's over if I can. But Kansas City Tribe has been having quite a season. These guys both played the Vixen, however, the Minnesota Vixen. And when we look at those head-to-head matchups, it kind of gives us a little insight. The Chicago Force beat the Minnesota Vixen 55-0, and the Kansas City Tribe beat them 48-8. So just that matchup alone would seemingly give the Chicago Force a little upper hand in this matchup. When we look at the Macy ratings, the Chicago Force has a Macy rating of 1.4, while the Tribe is 0.884. And overall rating, the Chicago Force is 3.3 and a little bit, and Kansas City Tribe is 2.7. So for that matchup, although I do have family in Kansas City and I've supported the Chiefs for a few years, I'm going to go against the Kansas City Tribe and say Chicago Force is going to pull that one off. I'm going to say by 10 points. So that might be a silly thing. I'm not even sure if they kick any field goals, but I'm going to go with the touchdown and a half there. A couple more teams that are 2-0 that are meeting each other. These are teams from the Eastern Conference. We have a huge, huge matchup between the Pittsburgh Passion and the DC Divas. Now, both of these teams have tremendous followings in their cities. They get some TV coverage. They play at big stadiums. They have over 1,000 people coming to their games. In fact, the DC Divas are lowering their ticket prices by $2-3 this game and are anticipating a couple thousand people showing up at the games. I don't know about you guys, but that would be unheard of here in California, I think. The ratings for these teams, the Pittsburgh Passion is rated slightly higher in the Macy ratings. They have a 2.1, while the DC Divas are just at 2.089. And in the overall rating, again, very, very close. Pittsburgh Passion has a 3.1 rating, while the DC Divas have a 3.089 rating. Head-to-head play, both of these teams have played the Detroit Demolition. And against the Detroit Demolition, the Pittsburgh Passion scored 29, but they gave up 6, while the DC Divas were able to score 35 and gave up 0. So they put the donut up there. So I am going to have to go with the DC Divas by a touchdown on this. Now, it doesn't mean I'm favoring one team or the other, but just the statistics, to me, favoring Pittsburgh Passion, I don't think they're counting that head-to-head matchup enough. So I think it's going to be a very tight game. I think both teams are ready for it, but seeing how it's being played in the Diva Stadium, and they did a little bit better against Detroit and a little bit more recently, I'm going to go with them. Finally, we have a 3-0 matchup between the South Atlantic teams, the Dallas Diamonds, and the Atlantic Explosion. We do have some head-to-head play. Let me go through the ratings first of all. The Macy ratings for the Dallas Diamonds, they are a 1.708, while the Atlantic Explosion is a 1.324. The overall ratings, which I suppose is just the ratings strictly from the league. Diamonds are at 3.6. They, in fact, are just under the Boston Militia, leading the league as far as the overall ratings. And then the Atlantic Explosion are 3.62. So that's very close. The Dallas Diamonds do have the edge there. Now, when we look at head-to-head competition, the Diamonds pulled way ahead out here. They played the Energy with a victory of 69-0. And then a more recent game, the Energy played the Atlantic Explosion, maybe a week or two later, could be very far apart, and their score is 38-7. So I definitely think the Diamonds are going to pull ahead in this game and clearly set themselves up as the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Although the Boston Militia, like I said, do have a rating that is overall higher by just a few hundredths of a point. So the Boston Militia are 3.68, while the Diamonds are 3.6. And then with the Macy ratings, they're up by about 72 hundredths. They're 1.783. Well, the Diamonds are 1.708. So those teams in the Eastern Conference are looking to be the teams to beat, but we'll see what happens with the game between the Pittsburgh Passion and the D.C. Beavis. The Detroit Demolition will be playing against the Baltimore Nighthawks, and that game will probably be a little bit less spectacular than the other Mid-Atlantic game between the Passion and the Divas, but a pretty good game nonetheless. Ratings are fairly close on that one, not too far apart, but it does put the Demolition a little bit ahead of the Nighthawk. So the ratings, when we look at the ratings, I'm not exactly sure what all goes into the ratings, but the team leading the Macy ratings would be the Pittsburgh Passion, followed closely by the D.C. Divas. Those teams have a 2.1 and a 2.0, and then followed by the teams I've already discussed, the Boston Militia, the Dallas Diamonds. Then we have the Chicago Force, the L.A. Amazons, and the Explosion, all with around the 1.4 to 1.3 mark. So when we look over at the overall ratings, again, the Boston Militia had that one with a 3.68, closely followed by the Diamonds with a 3.6. The Chicago Force have a 3.3, and then in fourth place, overall ratings would be the L.A. Amazons. They're at 3.248. When we get down to the next team, it's very close. The Atlanta Explosion are only 0.02 of a point behind. And then the Pittsburgh Passion, 3.1, and the Divas, 3.089. So we got some very, very closely rated teams. All of them, primarily, I believe, are without a loss. And this week four is setting itself up to be quite the playoff matches as far as the undefeated teams so far. So some of those will take a fall. Week four, May 2nd games. We have the Aftershocks and the Locomotion playing. I haven't made a prediction on that, but the Shockwave, I believe, will definitely take the Banshees. We've got the Crushers at Militia. I believe the Militia will take that fairly easily. The Militia lead their division while the Crushers are at the bottom. The Demolition are slightly higher rated than the Nighthawks. The Diamonds, I've already said, I think they're going to possibly even double the score of the Explosion. The Fox play at the Crush Field, and I believe the Fox will take that game. The Freedom are rated slightly higher than the Intensity, so I believe they'll take that game. Between the Fury and the Energy, that's a tough one. I believe the Energy will pull that out, so we'll go with that. Justice play the Rebels. I'm going to take the Breakers over the Maniacs. The Mayhem over the Phoenix, the Monsoon over the Menace. Like I said earlier, the Divas, I believe, will outpower the Passion just by a little bit. Over back on the West Coast, we've got the Corvallis Pride playing against the Sacramento Sirens. I believe the Sirens will pull that out fairly easily. The Queens are playing the Punishers at their field. They'll probably win that one. I discussed a little bit about the Amazons and the Quakes, some of the injuries that the Quakes have had to endure. So Amazons, I'm going to say they'll take that by about, I believe I said about 10. We got the Sharks playing at the Firebirds field, and Sharks will probably take that. Between the Tigers and the Fuel, that's a tough one. I think the Chicago Force are going to have a little bit of an edge over Kansas City. So we'll say 10 points on that game. The Vipers play the Illusion, and the Warriors play the Vixen. So we do have some pretty good mashups in the games for this week. That first game I didn't choose somebody. I'm going to go ahead and go with the Locomotion on that one. And then the Blitz will probably take over the Hurricane. The Justice, we'll go with the Justice over the Rebels. And then the Fuel over the Tigers. The Warriors, I believe, will take the Vixen. And then I just don't know over that game between the Vision, or Vision, the Vipers and the Illusion. So with Hank snorted up down there, let's run through some of the league standings as far as rushing. Rushing tends to be the way that most of the one of the teams get their points. We do have a few outstanding quarterbacks, and I still can't remember that quarterback's name for the Kansas City Tribe. Let me see if I can get in there and get that real quick. Jenny Schmidt, that's her name, and she's got quite an arm and has really racked up some pretty good offense in the passing. But we'll look at that in a little bit. Back to there goes that ADD thing. Sorry about that. But yards rushing on the season, we've got, let's see, the leader. We've got the Breakers with 490 yards, the Force with 954 yards, and then the Sirens have 679. The Quake have 500. The Locomotion have 800. We've got some teams, like, for instance, the LA Amazons have showed that they played one game here and that they've accumulated 306 yards. Now, I know that's inaccurate because they played at least two games, so they just haven't been reporting everything. But we definitely have some teams that are raking up the yardage. The Passion has only reported 342 yards rushing. So that's kind of surprising. The Mayhem have 495. The Militia have 294, but they've only reported one game. I know BJ said a whole lot this week about teams and reporting the stats, and that's really one of the only ways that fans can follow some of these distance games. But I have to add to that and say that, you know, looking at this is a completely amateuristic news show or sports show, but yet one that's really trying to find out some good information from the statistics. If you don't turn in your statistics, you are just hurting your organization. And overall, you're hurting women's football. I mean, just take Dr. Roach, as I would say, from the Liberty Bells. I mean, you can't argue with 292 yards, three touchdowns, and 54 yards receiving. That's just something that stands out. And, you know, when you're looking at teams not even reporting a single stat, it's just, it's not only disappointing for the fans, but from a publicity standpoint, it's just horrible. One team that has put in all their stats and is seemingly leading the league with rushing yardage would be the Chicago Force. They have 954 yards accumulated, and they are averaging 8 yards per attempt. So they're averaging 300 yards a game. That's pretty impressive. We've also got some statistics here on passing yards. And when we look at that, let me get over here to the right page. Total yards passing. The Energy have 168. and the Force again have 438. Now, I've been told that some of the IWFL statistics are kind of askew because they're doubling when they somehow when they input the statistics, they're kind of doing a little. I don't know if it's a formula or what, but they're doubling. So if these prove to be inaccurate, I'll let you know in a subsequent show. But right now we've got the Tribe with 466 passing yards, and that is substantially higher than any of the other teams. I mean, some of the other totals, and that is a two-game total, so that's not a three-game total. For instance, the Sharks have 173 yards, and that's double. The Tribe have double those yards racked up. So when we're looking at quarterbacks and the ones who seem to have the arm, we're definitely going to need to have Jimmy Schmidt on the list from the Kansas City Tribe. There are a few other teams that have racked up over 100 yards. Let me just run through them. The Diamonds have 116 yards, but that's in three games. The Divas have 140 in two games. In two games, the Energy, like I said, 168. The Force in three games have 438. In three games, the Freedom have 184. The Majestics have, in three games, 188 yards. The Maniacs in two games have 193 yards. And then in three different games, the Nemesis have 272, which is an average of 90 yards a game, which is fairly good, especially for women's football. The Passion have 203 yards, which is F for two games, so it's an average of 101 yards a game. And the Punishers have 113 yards, and that was only one game reported. The Quaker averaging 47 passing yards, but they have accumulated 141 in three games. And the Sharks, again, have 346, and that's for two games, so that's 173. But by far, the Kansas City, oh, wait, I forgot the Sirens. The Sirens have 134 in three games, so that's an average of 44 yards in a game. But again, leading the way is the Kansas City Tribe. They have 933 yards, and that's 466 passing yards per game, so that's a total of two games. Again, if that statistic is inaccurate, I'll have to let you know at another during another show. The Vixen in one game had 141, so that's an average of 141 yards per game. And the Warriors in three games have a total of 257 passing yards, and that's about 86 per game. When we jump over to the 2008 season, the maximum games played was, of course, 10, and that was for the Force and the Passion. And those teams were able to average, let's see, do I have points per game? I don't even see that. Let's go with yards per game, I guess. The Shreveport Aftershock averaged 187 yards a game. The Breakers, 240. The Diamonds, 346. So when we're looking at total yards, 300 yards a game by the Showgirls, 300 yards by the Quake. The top echelon group had around 300 yards a game. The Passion were just under that at 285. And then the Force had 248. So teams definitely need to be in that 300 yards a game average. But that is combining both passing and receiving, and we separated them. So let's run through the yards a game. With totals, the Amazons are averaging 300 yards a game. Well, they've only reported one, but in that one, they definitely had a total of over 300 yards. The Breakers in one game had 500 yards. And again, if that's the latest game that they played, I saw that game, and I don't think that they were able to accumulate 500 yards. So that may be a misappropriated statistic. The Demolition, are around the 200 mark. The Diamonds are 246, and that's in three games. the Force are averaging 484 yards a game. The Locomotion are averaging 300. The Militia, one of the higher ranked teams, are averaging 330. And the Tribe is averaging about 582 yards. So just to give you some statistics on how teams are looking at compared to the 2008 season, that's what we're looking at. So games this week, we are definitely going to see some teams emerge. There will be some teams that lose their perfect record. But we definitely will see the Majestics will continue on with a 3-0 record because they do have a bye. But some teams are going to emerge as the sole undefeated team in their divisions, and pretty soon we'll start to see some definitive teams taking a lead in the run for the championship in this 2009 season. So. That's a wrap-up of the statistics for the 2009 Week 4 in the IWFL. And those are the games that will be played tomorrow, which is May 6th.